So the first thing is, I was a little surprised to check the calendar and see that, in fact, next Sunday we start our next session. So you'll just have to be very engaged with TSK practice because you won't get any break, although we did have a break last Sunday. So we start next Sunday, and of course we go ahead with the remaining two chapters, I think it is, in the space section. I would be delighted, Sudaba says, "That's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you." I was going to say, in the intervening week, if you'd like to send any feedback on how this last session has gone, if you want to say something about how wonderful it is, that's always nice. But especially, things you think we could do differently, or ways to make it more effective or helpful, those kinds of comments would be really valuable. The second thing is, I am wondering whether we should continue with these practice days. I think we'll go ahead next time. It's already announced, not that that matters too much. But, we have a fairly small group today, and I noticed on the website that there weren't a lot of comments by people on their practice. Let me actually throw that question open for discussion for a moment. Does anybody have anything to say about that? Several of you have muted yourselves, but you can unmute yourselves. Or type something.
Hello, Jack. Can you
Yes,
hear me?
yes.
This is Sudhabe. I find it very valuable the fact that it's upon me to practice at least equivalent of a one day retreat. But this time around, I was not able to dedicate a whole day. But because I knew it, I have been dedicating an hour and a half here and there this past week. So it is very productive for my study to have this forum that you make yourself available and you trust whoever is interested will do the work necessary to gather again and pose questions which I would like to pose as we go forward. So that's my share.
Okay, well, that's helpful. And Kathleen is saying she likes the practice days, and maybe it'd be good to send a reminder. Sure, it's always good to remind people because people forget.
This is David.
Yeah.
I really appreciate them. I've been unable to participate or devote too much attention to it this week, but I've certainly enjoyed what Michael wrote, and I certainly look forward to it, reading what other people write when they have the chance.
Right. Okay, we just Okay, David, we're having trouble. We're having trouble hearing you. I'm not sure why, but you're breaking up. You're in fact
I
incomprehensible.
also heard you, David.
You did hear David clearly?
Yes, I did.
Okay, because I lost
Yes.
I heard the first part of what you said, David, but at a certain point you're it just broke up too badly to be able to understand you. But I got the basic point. Okay, well, so the feedback here is positive. Of course, we're speaking, this is the group of people who's attending. But I realize that people have other reasons. Sometimes they just can't make it. That's understandable. Okay, well, we will definitely do the next practice day, and I think when the time comes, I will encourage you to more strongly, perhaps this time, to share some of your experience on the website before we meet. So today we had Michael's comment, not too many other things. I wanted to say a couple of things by way of introduction, in a sense, and it partly comes from having gone back and reviewed the some of the recent posts, and there were those two very nice poems that Tsudeba posted and Michael posted, both a couple of weeks ago, so not completely timely, but still, I enjoyed reading them. And Tsudeba, I assume in the version that you posted two versions, and in one you used the word luminous awareness, and in the other you used God. I assume that you were the one who decided that luminous awareness was a nice translation. Is that true?
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Okay. Okay, well, it raises the question in my mind then. People could go back and look at those. There's some very nice images in both of them. But it raises a question that we've considered from time to time, which is, we have these great traditions of mystics, let's say, and masters who clearly have a very advanced understanding. So the question is, why do we want to approach these same kinds of issues through TSK and through the presentation in TSK? In a way, it's a big topic, but I think it's actually fairly straightforward. I just wanted to say, sort of make what seems to me a pretty obvious point. The thing about the TSK vision, there's two things about it. One is, it uses themes and topics, time and space and knowledge, that our culture prepares us to think about. We spend a lot of time in our culture, insofar as we think about anything. And I mean, we now, in the general sense of the population as a whole, insofar as we think about anything anything beyond our job and our vacation and our entertainment and what we're going to have for dinner, when we think about deeper questions, people have been educated to appreciate that it's worthwhile thinking about time and space in a new way, and that basically dates back about a century to Einstein, and then quantum theory or quantum physics, and so you get all these books that are bestsellers all the time. Brian Greene's books are the obvious example right now, where he's constantly talking about different ways of understanding space and time, and people are very interested in that. So it makes sense to use that vocabulary and that way of thinking, and at the same time take the exploration in a completely different direction. So that's one thing about why TSK seems to me to be an appropriate teaching for our times, which certainly is what Rinpoche has said, and in fact, the very fact that he's put all this energy into creating TSK is like that. Okay, there's somebody speaking. It's Hayward, and again, for some reason,
Like
our mic.
mothers for class, can hear you, Jack.
Excuse me? You can't hear
None
me.
of us can have, yeah. For
Can you
maybe
hear?
what, half a minute or a minute.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
No. Well, I don't have any great answer. There must be something about the connection. Well, I was just talking. I don't know exactly what you didn't hear, but I was basically saying that we're well trained to think that space and time are in some sense, appropriate topics for inquiry. That's really all I was saying.
What I value about it is that if space and time are intrinsic to ordinary experiences,
Right.
and it's more difficult for me to see the divine within the ordinary
Right.
And it's easier for you to see the presence of space and time.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that was mostly, that's essentially where I was going to go with the second point I wanted to make, which is just, but I think you put it really well. TSK is really set up to, so that you can investigate the themes and topics in your ordinary experience. And one way to say that, which is what you were saying, Hayward, is space and time are with us all the time, and it's very easy for us to look to ask questions about how our experience is unfolding. Whereas there is this sense when you look at the mystical traditions that somehow it has to be very special. You have to go somewhere else or be someone else or embark on this long path. That's true in every tradition. Even though there are also in every tradition there are there are reminders that you that it can it's not a question of a long path in the usual sense. You can just jump right in. You can have the kind of you can gain the fruit, as you would say in the Buddhist tradition. The fruit is always available. Nonetheless, it's hard to make that transition. But in TSK, it's there from the very beginning, it seems to me. The suggestion that you can do this in your daily practice. And that too is very
Kind of enlightenment for dummies.
Well, let's say enlightenment for ordinary folks, yeah. In the Tibetan tradition, when they talk about ordinary people, they very often do use a word which kind of translates like to dummies, They say dummies think that such and such, fools or simple folk, and they often use that in debate too. They without naming their the person they're debating with necessarily, they say, well, some dummies think such and such, and then they go ahead and describe their opponent's position,
So it's interesting you left knowledge out of what our culture has sort of made
Right.
popular source of inquiry.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we think we know that what we think we know what the possibilities for knowledge are. There is a certain appreciation for knowledge, which I'm just kind of riffing on this right now, but I haven't thought about it. But we do have this notion of genius, so the great image for knowledge in our culture is Einstein. You just see his face everywhere. And there's this notion that some people are just so smart. And I guess Stephen Hawking is sort of in that domain too. And interestingly, again, it's people who deal with questions of space and time because of their focus on physics or cosmology. And then maybe certain great artists and this whole idea in the last 20 years or so in the MacArthur Foundation Genius Awards, I was just reading something the other day about his name skips my it slips my mind at the moment, the novelist who committed suicide not too long ago, who I read something that he had said after he got the MacArthur Genius Award, and he basically felt that it was this huge burden placed on him, because he didn't feel like a genius, but now he had to somehow be one. So there is something about knowledge, but it does tie in directly to time and space, at least in a lot of cases. Okay, well, those are really just a couple of points I wanted to make. Sudhi is about to give us a quote from Milarepa, but she hasn't finished typing it in yet. Thank you for doing all that work. So we will wait for that.
Well, I read it if you can hear me.
Yeah, sure.
He says in this one story, I'll just do these three lines. I realize, Milarepa says, I realize that both samsara and nirvana are neither existent nor non-existent. and I see all forms as Mahamudra, which I assume is appearance. And I see all forms as appearance. He says Mahamudra, which I'm imagining he means as appearance. And in this story, the context is he sees these demons and he freaks out and asks all the deities, please come help me. And then all of a sudden he starts thinking that all of these are my imagination. Why am I even freaking out? And then things change. Everyone becomes kind, you know, the demons. And I wondered if you could expound on this a little bit using the zeroless space, luminous awareness, and the piece that is really puzzling to me is what appears, it seems, is able to shift and change as soon as I remember that it is appearance. How I have a hand in this existence, non-existence, it just amazes me. So, Jack, would you give me a little hint?
Well, you know, I don't want to try to tie it in too closely to what Milarepa says, although, you know, that's a wonderful quote, and I'm not sure it's fair to translate Mahamudra as appearance, but it's not. It's interesting. It does help perhaps add a different dimension. Well, the thing about, you know, there's a very nice line. I think it's in the Rumi poem. It's not clear to me in that poem, and this is a poem that was posted on the site by Michael, or maybe it's in the one that you posted, Sudhi. I can't remember right now. There's a very nice line that says, I probably have it wrong, but it says I actually wrote it down, so like let me find the actual line. Here it is. The way the night knows itself with the moon. I thought that was lovely. You know, who is the moon and who is the night? That's a question. I'd have to go back and look at the poem. But I think that that's a way to think about our role. It's a little bit like a line I think I used in here before, maybe it was in another class, on a different topic, but you know, there's this famous line by the German mystic Meister Eckhart, who says, the eye with which I see God is the eye with which God sees me. And both of those quotes suggest that there's a, you could say, a kind of special role that we have to play. We human beings have to play in the cosmos, is as you know, the locus for knowledge, for awareness. There is a you know, we're kind of the fulcrum. You know, I'm thinking about the fulcrum as this point on which you can shift the weight from one direction to another. It's the turning point. And we're the turning point. If we see things in a certain way, then that's how the cosmos is. And if we see things in a different way, then that's how the cosmos is. And it's not because we have some special magical power, but because our way of seeing, you know, is already a manifestation of luminous awareness, to use the phrase that you used, Sudhi. It's just that, you know, we've turned it into something very dull and routine. That's what we do. That's what is characteristic of our particular understanding. And so, you know, the thing that the TSK teachings point out over and over in so many different ways, and such a vast array of images and suggestions and exercises and so on, is that we don't have to accept the ordinary way of seeing and being, because it's just one possibility. And so the first point in doing these practices is to realize that it could be different. There's a line that I like to quote in the first TSK book. It's around page 110 or so, where he's summarizing the what he's been saying about space in that book. And he's talking about three levels of space. And he says, most people, when they read that, I think just automatically assume, and I'm not trying to put ideas in your mind, but this has been my experience. Most people just assume that first level space is the world that we inhabit. But if you look at the passage I'm thinking of, that's not quite true. What he says about the first level of space from a TSK perspective, he says, it's our ordinary experience seen in the light of the possibility that it could be different. And that's the starting point. That recognition that it's not as though we're in one mode of being and we have to shift to some other mode of being. It's that we're exercising one kind of knowledge, and we could exercise a different kind of knowledge. And that the way to do that, then, from a TSK perspective, the really powerful, effective, immediate, and readily available way to do that is to investigate space and time and knowledge directly. So that's my rather long answer. I actually had been thinking about saying something about the three levels of space, time, and knowledge, which is a theme that,
I also think,
go ahead, please. Hayward?
I also think that it's an invitation to reframe our ordinary experiences, where we can, instead of seeing things, we see things more as space. And as we attend to space and as we attend to movement, the ordinary frozen perceptions of the world around us change. And when we apply those same insights to our own being and appreciate ourselves as an embodiment of space, it relaxes the sense of identity with the egocentric, self-referencing way as space becomes identity.
Yeah, that's good. That's a nice description. I've just been reading something for another class, which is talking about traditional Buddhist views on the self. And of course, the Buddhist teaching on the self says that the self is not a thing or a substance, and doesn't have a fixed identity, that it's a kind of a construct. And there's clearly overlap there between TSK and Buddhist teachings. But the point that you make about seeing our own embodiment as space is exactly the kind of special quality here. Not to leave out time, but our focus right now is space. Because the traditional Buddhist arguments, if you go and read the great masters and the commentaries and that they, the works that they wrote, it has to do with kind of a penetrating insight, that is, it starts off as conceptual and then becomes experiential, and it asks you to really analyze your experience in terms of various conceptual structures. I'm trying to say too much in just a few words, but I can't, we can't really talk about that here. But the thing about TSK is that it gives you this very concrete and embodied way of doing it, you could say, which is to say, yes, let's really investigate our embodiment in terms of space and see what that's like. And really, what we've been looking at a lot in this last course is let's investigate appearance, what we think of usually as the objective world. It's not that it doesn't apply to us, and we'll see that more clearly as we go on in the next program, but the focus has really been on this idea of appearance, and recognizing that what manifests as substance is still only appearance. I'm pausing in case anybody wants to add anything to that. If not, there's one more point I want to make, and then maybe the way to, well, let me make the point first, and then we'll see how to go on. It has to do with appearance. And one of the exercises that was suggested for this practice day, and also that we've been looking at a lot, is that is seeing appearance as appearance, and seeing substance as the appearance of substance, which is a very wonderful, simple, and powerful way of looking at things, it seems to me. What I wanted to add to that, or at least make sure is clear, is that appearance, when we talk about substance as the appearance of substance, it's very easy in our language to think that we're saying appearance and we mean a noun, right? Well, I don't have a good example, but we just tend to think of it as something that has appeared is an appearance. But in fact, the word appearance it has to do with a verb. It has to do with the act of appearing. And this is an issue that comes up a lot in TSK. We tend to turn everything into nouns. So that's why sometimes when we talk about knowledge, it seems like it's more helpful to talk about knowing, because it invites us to remember that this is an ongoing activity. So when we talk about substance as the appearance of substance, maybe it's helpful to say substance as the appearing of substance, right? It's an ongoing activity. And it might be helpful to think about a painting, because if a painter paints a landscape, and you look at the painting and you say, well, what you're looking at is the appearance of the landscape, but in fact what you're looking at is the painter's experience of the landscape, right? Yeah, you could say how the landscape appeared to him or appeared to her. And by saying it in that way, I think you encourage the realization that appearance always has this knowledge dimension in it. And I think that that's really the liberating aspect when you say to investigate appearance, or to put appearance at the center instead of substance. You're inviting the knowing dimension, so that everything that appears is an appearing, you could say an appearing to someone, although that's too limited, but at least you can say that the idea of appearance involves knowing. So, Karen says a little bit about her practice, which is good. I think maybe I was going to suggest that we do a short practice now and then talk about it, because that usually is a way to engage people. But this has been an interesting session today, because I noticed that people have been actively involved. It's and a little bit more so than is usual. Usually we do a practice and then people really report on their practice, which is great. But I appreciate the discussion we've been having. So Karin here is reporting about the first of the suggested exercises, which was to look at what's going on that cannot be named. So really asking or inviting that inquiry is a way of pointing towards what's not substance, what's not a noun, you know, because nouns are things we name, pretty much. Okay, so she says, I again and again felt like waking up from a dream, like stepping out of a dream, being astonished what is going on in my mind. Well, good. That's a very nice realization to have as a result of that exercise. Another way of saying that is that we stay on the surface of appearance, right? Or a better way to say it in terms of what we've just been saying is we stay with the labels, and that's a theme, of course, that we've been exploring perhaps a little bit more in the fall than in this
Jack,
last sequence. Yes.
I'm finding it helpful to recognize that it's the surface of time and space. That way, that it's all appearances are surface of time and space, or time and space appearing that way.
Well, that's good. I think that's interesting, and there are certainly places you can look in the TSK books that suggest that. I just, because I have the TSK book, excuse me, the Dynamics book with me, I just flipped through it to find a diagram where Rinpoche says, that presents something similar to what you just said. It's on page 229, and I'm not going to ask people to look at it now, but it's exactly pointing toward the possibility that there's a surface, and he's talking about it in terms of time here, and that it's possible to go into the depths of time. So you'll see if you look on page 29, the image is a simple one, but that's exactly what it shows. I think that depth is a wonderful model. I mean, the word itself is very helpful because it takes us deeper. That's what it means. That is a lot like waking up from a dream, to go back to Karin's image. We have all these possibilities, you know. So we talk about space level one, or that's the what I quoted earlier from the first TSK book, and that's recognizing that there's a different possibility. And then when you go into these possibilities, that's when experience shifts, and you could talk about that definitely in terms of level two, what Rinpoche talks about as you know, second level experiences of time and space and knowledge. So to see substance as the appearance of substance, you could say it's a second level experience. I do think that in the Dynamics book, the second and third levels are kind of presented, excuse me, at the same time. So it's a way of experiencing, you know, substance as the appearance of substance. Let's just use that as our shorthand. That's a second level experience, but it also opens into the third level. Okay. So Michael has a comment here too. Ekgnosis provides a surprising extension to the idea that the senses are two-way channels. The wind and the trees light up ourselves as the listeners, as well as the spinning leaves and swaying branches. That's a very nice image, thank you. Namely, that we, the listeners, are as much the children of knowledge as is the world that appears before us. Yeah, that's very nice. I think related to what Hayward said, and another way of talking about waking up from the dream. So these are some themes that that we can explore and continue to explore. It's very true. You know, I said before that you know we are the occasion for knowledge appearing in the world. That's a maybe you could say a first level or second level at the most way of saying it, that it's true, but it also points toward the possibility that knowledge, as Rinpoche says, and it's something you've heard me quote before because I like it so much, that knowledge is not what the knower knows. You know, knowledge, we start off with the knowledge that the knower knows, but waking from the dream, or going into the depths of space and time, or going into a two-way knowing, the inward-outward knowing of ekgnosis, those are all ways of talking about knowledge manifesting in a way that goes beyond the knower. And that was one reason that I suggested that exercise from love of knowledge, the one in which you just see the self as part of what's given. That's an exercise that in my experience, sometimes it opens up for people, and then it's very much like what Karin said, the sense of waking up from a dream, or you know, recognizing that what you just have always thought was true, is only one small aspect of what's true. Okay, well, I think I'm actually just going to stop things there. I think it's been a very nice reflection. I do appreciate you know, that everybody or that several of you have been communicating, sharing your thoughts. I personally think that it's helpful when people speak rather than write, although that we've had a combination today, and clearly, I'm not saying people shouldn't write, but when people speak, you get a little bit more of a sense that we're all in this together, you know. So let's keep that open as a possibility. But I'm absolutely, you know, I've been very interested in the way that the chat room has added another dimension and gives people a chance to contribute in a different way. So I'm not quite sure, you know. I mean, it's fine to stay with that. I like hearing people's voices too. So for next week, when we start the next session, we'll see. We can do some combination, which is how it's been so far anyway. Okay. Well, of course, the fact that some of you may have had time, difficulty setting aside time for a one day, you know, a day of solid practice, that's a valuable thing. But of course, one of the characteristics of the TSK vision, which we've talked about, is that it's available all the time. So keep practicing, keep working with it. You may want to review what we've done. You can read ahead. We're not going to be reading a whole lot for the next program, but the more familiar you are with it, the better. And we'll meet again next Sunday to start the next session. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Jack.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.